Welcome to the Cascadian Prophets Podcast, a production of the Cascadia Poetics Lab, empowering people to practice poetry and deepen connections to place, self, and the present moment. Rescue and revival of a Seattle legend, Carletta Carrington Wilson interprets James Washington Jr. as an essay in a book that chronicles a residency at the home of this underappreciated Seattle sculptor who died in the year 2000. But not until leaving behind a body of work at his home in a neighborhood that he would not recognize 23 years after his death. Carletta Carrington Wilson is a poet whose work, described as decorative with a message, has been exhibited in museums, galleries, and libraries in Seattle and beyond. She's here to talk about her new book, Poem of Stone and Bone, the iconography of James W. Washington Jr. in 14 stanzas and 31 days. We'll discuss the exhibit she created in the Washington House and his work and legacy in a world that may be beginning to recognize the depth of the gestures of people like James W. Washington Jr. Carletta, welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. This book has been a long time in the making.
Well, actually, it's so interesting because I actually wasn't trying to create a book. My first intention was to create just a little catalog with images, description of the project. I just wanted to document it. But I was talking to Anna Ballant one day, and she says, well, what are you working on? And I said, well, you know, I'm working on my bucket list. And that was, you know, ever since I had the residency at the Washington Foundation, I wanted to I felt it was important to document it in some way. So I was just going to, you know, print about maybe 200 copies just that I could hand to people to tell them about this project. Anyway, Anna says, well, Phoebe would be interested in that. And I was like, oh, yeah, they did publish two essays and the poem. So I would have had to interact with Phoebe anyway. And that's actually how it happened. I wasn't trying to get published in a book.
And here it is, this beautiful book.
Thank you.
For people to see. How do you describe Mr. Washington to those unfamiliar with him and his work?
Well, what I say about Mr. Washington is that I first lead with, he has a kind of mystical Christianity. And he's such a complex person. You know, when you think about Mr. Washington, there's all these levels. It's the sculpture, it's the travel, it's his mind, it's his library. And there are all these elements that are fused. He's also a poet. He's written, you know, it's a very early kind of poetry, but he has a poetic essence in terms of, what was it, there's a kind of book that people could just send in and you could get your work published in it. So he has that. So the thing is, I describe him, though, is really amazing in terms of his philosophy, his description of how he works and how he melds this mystic sensibility with stone and those images.
Art is a holy land where initiates seek to reveal the spirituality of matter. That might be a quote that describes what you're talking about.
That's exactly.
Yeah, and that's on page 3 of the book, so you get to it right away. How do you see this principle manifesting in his work?
Well, actually, I mean, that was part of my residency. I mean, it was actually a journey. When I first walked up, not the first time, Esther Irvin invited me to, well, I was bringing her from, in the book, I talk about it. We were coming from Everett. There was a conference. I was driving her back. She said, there's something at the Washington Space. I had been there before in conjunction with the African American Museum, but I had not gone to the studio. And just coming in through to the studio along that walkway, I saw these objects. I saw this thick chain. Inside, he had this 16th century Spanish galleon. You know, I immediately, you know, of my work with slavery, just connected with these objects. And I had not really explored, you know, Mr. Washington's, I hadn't looked at the interview, the oral history on the Archives of American Art, but I just resonated with all of this. And so this is how I entered into that space as a kind of explorer. There was something here that I need to make some connections to. And I looked at the other artists in residence and I was thinking like, well, nobody else is tapping into this. But it just, I mean, it just ignited me. So I'm not sure what you were asking me, but...
Well, it was the quote and how it manifests in his work. And the quote again is, art is a holy land where initiates seek to reveal the spirituality of matter.
And that's what he did on that property. That is what the function of the property was. It was like a vehicle for him. He had these, we would find little maquettes of stones around the property. It was this, I'm glad that you're mentioning land, because he was also a landscaper. When you look on that property, there's Asian influence. As I said, I saw the South. I saw all of these elements coming. I didn't see that initially on that first visit, but when I began that residency and moved around the property, that is how I could see. He built basically his own holy land.
And he sculpted stone until the spirituality of that stone was revealed.
Exactly, exactly.
It takes a special person. I'm thinking of the wall at Kubota Garden and how that was made by a wall expert that has been in, whose family has been in that business for generations and generations, and how they can almost talk to it. They can almost have a conversation with the stone to make it part of the project that they're working on. And I think Mr. Washington was the same way.
Well, that's really interesting you mentioned that, because, you know, do you have the Kubota book? Is this the spirit in the
stone? I've got it somewhere around here.
Because actually at AWP, I shared the panel with Kubota about the parallels between Washington and Mr. Kubota, how they both embraced stone and its spiritual function and its mystical function. Right. Both of those men did that.
Right. And stone is always a very important part of Japanese gardens, because of the fact that there is something approximating animism in Japanese Zen culture. In the book, it states that in 1949, Mr. Washington's art changed, emphasizing his belief in the interconnectedness of all people. Some of the work before that had a distinct political overtone, but after 49, it was all people are connected.
Right, but you know, it was when he went to Mexico.
That was a big thing.
Right. The you know, he did ask for, I don't know the exact wording, but guidance from the absolute. And he literally had, that was the pivot for him in terms of his work and his consciousness. And of course, there he picked up the stone and brought it back.
So this is 1951, and he goes down to Mexico and he meets, among other people, Diego Rivera.
Exactly. Yeah. Which, you know, when you think about that journey, I mean, he really, in, you know, he traveled to something like 15, 16 countries. I don't know if he had any experience in any of those countries like he had in Mexico. I mean, that was a transformative moment. And it, he didn't act upon that right away. So there were some years. But once he touched that stone, it was like he was ignited. And he was knighted, if you understand what I mean, in that work. Yeah, it's really amazing. I think that, if more than anything, I think, right, when he was painting, it was more social commentary, social, you know, response to political issues and some religious. But going to Mexico, and I love it, the symbolism of the Avenue of the Dead. You know, I mean, I just think he found, I don't know, it was his holy moment. It sustained him for the rest of his life.
He walks by this stone.
Yes.
And then thinks, no, I got to get that stone.
Oh, something tells him. He didn't think it. Something said to him. You know, something said he was receiving. He was receiving some kind of energy that said, pick up the stone.
Yeah.
And you know, the stone is called a young boy in Athens, or the boy in Athens. So I thought it was telling that he first chose a boy. And then, of course, I mentioned Athens and Greek. And, you know, he was so widely read. So all of this also, this sort of energy is also in that piece. It was, there could be no other piece to be the first piece, if you understand what I mean.
Right. You talked a little bit about your residency, but what made you decide, I got to apply for this, and I've got to do something if awarded the residency?
Well, so initially, the residencies were by invitation only. And I'd have to say I didn't have any street cred, and so I wasn't going to be invited. I just realized, I mean, you know, I didn't think I was going to be invited. So
wait, where on the application does it say you got to have street cred?
Well, wait, there was no application. It was just by invitation. But Susan Platt said to me, they're opening up the process for applications. And when she said that, I mean, she really, all she had to do was tell me, because obviously I was going to apply, because previous to that, I had gone a couple of times and I was already saying to myself, I just have to do something here. I don't know what it's going to be. You know, I had sort of said, well, could I have access to the library? But it just wasn't sort of happening. But once that process opened up, I already basically, Ian and I described it, I already was working on it. I already was moving towards that.
Take us through the four parts of your installation. The bloodline of time.
Right.
The house stands firm.
Right.
We have eaten the forest.
Yes.
And thrive upon the rock.
Right. So, okay, so they all didn't come together at once. And it's very interesting. How can I say this? As I moved through the space, well, I knew, first of all, I wrote the poem first. So I asked them. So I did something that's, you know, the residency was May 2011. But I knew that I needed to have all that time to work on the grounds. So I asked Tim Detweiler, who was the director then, if I could come in January. And so I began the process of writing that poem. And then once I got that out of the way, and the thing is, the poem in its own way is the foundation of the whole installation, if you understand what I mean. So then I came on the property and I had to, how can I say, you know, map it. Now, what took my attention right away was that greenhouse, because it turned into an altar. And I was really seeing that I could use that space. That was really where I started first. It had lots of junk in it, so we had to get all of that out. But I found this wrought iron, which led me to New Orleans, Louisiana, all these stones. I started just working that space up. And then I, you know, it had to have some sort of cohesive journey. And there were these big boulders, huge boulders in the middle of the yard. I started trying to figure out how to integrate that with the stones. And then Ernie Thomas came. And, you know, sometimes people would come around. I took him on a tour, and he was the one that identified at the bottom of the garden. You know, there was this path, it was overgrown with blackberries, whatever, but we're trying to figure out how's he getting these stones in here. And then he showed me, and we could see how there was apparently at some point some little driveway where you could drive up, you could drop off, and then you could see the equipment to pull the stone in. That's where it began. Once I had that, then I had to figure out how was I going to connect these pieces. Well, that's where the bloodline came in, with that just sequined string. It was a sequin, red sequin string, but it would link the bloodline to the house stands firm. And the house stands firm for me is, so they all have their own place in Washington's story. But that house stands firm is, and not more than one person came in there. I mean, Angela cried. I mean, people felt it. They felt it more than any other space. I mean, I didn't, you know, I don't know. There's something mystical about the Washington space anyway, but it sort of congealed in that space. And so then from there, of course, we have eaten the forest. Then we moved into the studio. And I can't even remember how I know, because he had all of these objects. He had a beehive. He had huge snake skins, giant skulls. He had an owl. All of these objects that represented death. That is, you know, when I saw, I needed to find a way to, you know, to recognize the connection between all of these. I think Mr. Washington was really fascinating because he was also a collector. He had African art objects. It's in the house, but in that studio, these skulls, cow skulls, you know, an owl. I mean, think he could have picked any other bird, but he picked an owl. The owl, the snake skins. I mean, I was just looking at all of this. Well, of course,
Gloucester, Mississippi.
Yes, Gloucester, Mississippi was like a sawmill town. Well, I found it was pine forest. And so I realized that this was Gloucester in some way. This was somehow representing loss, death, something there. And it really did become, I found these, believe it or not, these branches on the streets. Somebody had cut a tree and I could push them up against well, and they would stand. So it was like this whole stand, the trees. And then there was this piano there. Oh, he had an elephant tusk. I mean, all of these objects. So from there, and I not only talked about not Gloucester, but just the loss, the amazing loss in the environment as a result of slavery.
And the KKK. Yes. His father said the wrong thing to the wrong white person. And they said, "I'm going to get the KKK on you."
Yes.
And he had, his father, James Washington Jr., had
Senior.
James Washington Sr. was the man who had to be taken away; otherwise, he would have been lynched.
Yep.
And that kind of fear was the baseline, the foundation of his existence in Gloucester, Mississippi.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we can understand why he'd want to have some voodoo in his place, because it does sound, you know, it does sound like this is a mystical sort of effort at exorcism.
Yeah, so he wouldn't have voodoo now, you know. But he,
well, I don't use voodoo in the sense that he was a practitioner
from Haiti,
he was using energetic magic in his own way.
He was.
But in a way that the people at the Mount Zion Church would have said, well, we understand.
Yeah.
Right?
I know. But, well, think about it. He was close also. He was going to New Orleans. You know, he was, I'm saying he was just like a mystical kind of person in terms of how he approached Christianity. He was not bound by those tenets. He said that. He's not, you know, he's not confined by that. He's more expansive than that. So that's how we have eaten the farce, it's my political statement, that ushers us down into the studio proper, where Mr. Washington really did all of this important work.
Where he would thrive upon the rock.
Yes, indeed. And he did.
Yeah. In the book, you have journal entries about applying, you know, whether you're going to get the application or whether you'll be getting the residency or not. And I'm wondering, tell us about the decision to include those journal entries in this book.
Well, as I mentioned, I wasn't really trying to have a book. I mean, it didn't even occur to me, because I've tried so long to get a book and I've just sort of gave up on it. Not this, my poetry book. So I just said, I'm just going to do a small little catalog. However, when I started talking with Phoebe and she says, well, send me something. And of course I had the images, we had the essays, Angela, Anna, and I had written an essay, which didn't get into Raven Chronicles. So that was my first priority, too. Like, well, I had to get my... So as we were doing that, but as I was thinking, well, now this is going to serve a different purpose than me just giving a document of the project. If someone does not know Mr. Washington, and we just limit it to the essays and the images, they're not going to have any idea of how the project came to fruition. So I was not intending to put those entries into that book initially, but I had to, especially. So I had two. I have two journals. I have one that I just call Progress Reports, which is just my general journey. But I did have a discrete journal for the residency, and I needed to do both, and that's how they got in there. And I still initially, now it's okay. But at first I was like, well, I didn't want to sort of move this into the public realm, but I feel that it is necessary, because people would not understand the project if that hadn't happened.
Well, I mean, I want to tell you that it was a remarkable thing to start reading the book and saying, okay, I got an interview with Carletta, I got to read the book, I got to take notes, I'm reading the book on the link, and I see a journal entry, and it mentions my name.
I know.
And I said, now, wait a second, I was journaling on that day and the day after, and I, because, you know, you can check your documents on the phone now, because you have it on the cloud, right? So I go and see, did I write something about that experience? And sure enough, I have this document.
You're kidding.
Which I wrote.
Wow.
Wednesday, May 25th, 2011, journal excerpt.
Wow.
My meeting with Nancy Rawls went well, and I asked her if she had heard about Carletta's poem of Stone and Bone exhibit at the James Washington House. I had a religious experience and could feel the Latihan come into me when Carletta Wilson led us into the greenhouse, in which she made a shrine complete with empty eggshells. She was so delighted to see Nancy and I walk in. She gave us a tour of the yard, which she rearranged with stuff from the yard and house. James Washington was a self-taught sculptor who studied with Mark Toby, was a contemporary of Jacob Lawrence, and visited Diego Rivera in Mexico. He was a mason and into esoteric spirituality, and I was fascinated by the house and his life. I wrote something to hang on the tree at Carletta's urging. Poem of Stone and Bone for Carletta Wilson. If we'd all seek to reveal matter's indigenous spirit, how holy the imagination we'd see, how hell's gates could not stop us, how the dogwood blossoms festoon Mr. Washington's backyard in May, how holy the genius underneath the bloodline, how this force is always there waiting to awaken in your focused gaze.
Wow.
I have to say, the Washington House tour changed my attitude of gloom and doom from one to hope. Every bit of writing on the walls reminded me of the organic approach, and he would have resonated with field theory.
Wow, that's amazing, Paul.
I was stunned to see that.
Wow.
And so I knew I had to type that
yes.
up and print it out, edit it and print it up. I think now is a good time for you to read the poem.
Okay.
So I think it's on page 31, if my memory serves. And, Poem of Stone and Bone, the Iconography of James Washington, Jr. in 14 Stanzas and 31 Days by Carletta Carrington Wilson, published in Seattle by Raven Chronicles Press.
Poem of Stone and Bone. Along civilization's trail, something went wrong. What to say if they come in the morning? King's blood royal, monkey on a string, substance and shadow the uncalled, yesterday, today, and forever, bearing witness to the truth. The way of the wizard, mystics, and Zen masters journey into light, souls on fire, born to rebel. Temples, tombs, and hieroglyphs, this is what we found, the unheavenly city. City of the great king, the eternal city, child of two worlds, miracle and stone, born in blood, walking on water, remaking men, jasmine, two or three gathered together, seven came through, 13 against the odds move, and on up master men, making a go of life. Deep is the hunger in life's springtime. The soul's sincere desire, somewhere to be had. Steer by star, stars of thought, go up for glory, the crowning experience, the beautiful necessity beyond east and west. Here's how and when. His eye is on the sparrow, butterflies and moths, the serpent and the rainbow, the great red dragon coming of age in Mississippi. Here is your war. 4 days, 1,000 days. Blind spots, seeds of conflict, the tear in the cup. The yoke, unquenchable black fires, wings of the morning, ravens, crows, magpies, jays lifting as they climb onto the hills. Sir Boss, lame deer, seeker of visions, please don't shoot my dog. Make your own bread and roses from stone, from ether to cosmos. Unto thee I grant seven stars and Orion, the shape of illusion, the magic of obelisk, the edge of infinity, the divining hand, twice sold, twice ransomed. Moon, moon. Blood on the moon beneath the stone, the royal path of life, the luminous darkness parting the water, excuse me, while I kiss the sky. This side of innocence, eyelids of morning, cosmic magnetism, water and ice, the magic of honey, every living creature, a feast of flowers, the pupil of the eye, the invisible fulcrum in tune with the infinite. This wonder world, library of mesmerism, the uncommon commonplace, murmurs of earth, the incredible egg, the key of the mystery, the great within, the inward sea, the invisible empire. Here I stand beside the still waters, The man who talks with the flowers, the man who found out why the beautiful ones are not yet born. Hear me talking to you, I heard the owl call my name. The forged note, a new song in a strange land. Heat, sound and light, blood, sweat and tears, answer to history. Let there be sculpture, poems of cabin and field, buried cities, recovered landmarks and surface markings. The evidence of things not seen.
Please don't shoot my dog.
I love that one. I love it too.
Oh, please don't shoot my dog. That's amazing.
And you know, he had a dog.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I read that later, but Mr. Washington had dogs.
And nobody ever shot him.
No.
See, that's the magic working right there. Tell us about how you assembled, how you composed that poem. It is an assembly in a way, isn't it?
Well, it is. So as I mentioned, that I went to that library. I had access to that library in January 2011. And, from the first time I saw Mr. Washington's library, I was really, really amazed. I had not seen anything like it. You know, I've been to a lot of people's homes, but, you know, generally people have shelves of books, maybe a shelf on a wall, one shelf, you know. But it's a very small room. It has three freestanding shelves and then three walls with shelves along them. So it was totally a library. And I just can imagine, well, this is just amazing that he built it. And, you know, as a former librarian, I scanned these shelves and he had all of these subjects, religion. He even had the occult, philosophy, how to do electrical work, gardening. I mean, anything you would find in a public library. Very small, just but a representative collection. He even had a book by Intozaki Shange. And I was like, now, wait a minute. I would not assume that this man would be reading Intozaki Shange. He had fiction, biography. I mean, it was just amazing. So I had to sort of, you know, the first day I was there, I was just sort of taking in all of these subjects, just the range of it. And then, well, I have done this project before, and it's not new to me, where you create a poem using the titles of on the spines of books. So then I just sat there, and I just had these lists and lists and lists of titles that had to resonate in some way. You know, they could not be too specific, meaning to, you know, like JFK. But they had to have what I say is this connectivity. They had to be able to connect. And, you know, given that I didn't know Mr. Washington, I mean, I really didn't know him, to try to create a poem really about him, somehow to reach some aspect of his thought process. Well, how would you get to that except by his books? How would you get to how he thinks? What was important to him? How would you get to that man? How would you get the language, is what I'm trying to say. How would I access that language without being able to talk to him, listen to him? Well, it was through that library, which meant so much to him, obviously, to create such a library. So that's what I did. I just went and I just wrote. So not only did I get the lines of the poem, but the spaces also had resonance coming out of that, all of the text that I found in the library. So that's how essential the library is to the project.
The stanza breaks.
Yes.
Yeah. And was her book called Please Don't Shoot My Dog?
Now stop it.
I want to read that.
I don't know. I'm just saying, I found it. See, that's a great title, isn't it?
It's a great title.
I know.
I want to give that as a writing exercise.
I know. Yeah. It's just, yeah.
Is part of what attracts you to Mr. Washington the notion that he was underappreciated in his lifetime and maybe your own work is underappreciated?
No, I don't make any correlation between that at all. What I felt was that Mr. Washington was complex. He had such, his ideas, his thinking was so complex. I just said, I don't know why people have not embraced him more. That's what my thinking was. I don't think about myself as being unappreciated. You know, I think, you know, I have been moving along at just the right clip. You know, I can't do more. I don't want more than I have to manage. So, but I do think for Mr. Washington, for his, now, you know, this is the other thing. First, being an African-American artist way up here in the Pacific Northwest. So I think, well, he couldn't do this work anywhere else. Maybe he couldn't do it himself, but you wouldn't have had the attention. So for him to build, he has built this, it's basically a complex out of which to work. And he and his wife have left a legacy. I'm trying to find out if any other artists have done something similar. This is what was unique about them. You know, people have their work shown, they're recognized, but they left a legacy. And it's the legacy, it's the library, it's his philosophy that I just felt and still feel that people need to know about this man.
The statue at, 24th and Union, that
right.
might help, right?
Yep.
Beautiful statue.
Barry Johnson's work.
Barry
yes.
Johnson,
yep.
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. There was one part of your idea for the residency that didn't manifest during that time.
You're right.
And I'm talking about music.
Exactly.
And back 12 years ago, I don't think Spotify was in existence.
No.
However, being one of my hobbies to create playlists.
You did.
I have a poem of Stone and Bone, Maker of Mystery Music
you
playlist.
You are something, Paul.
And I just want to, I think this would be an appropriate way to to leave this interview is by clicking on this right here. Okay, well, I'm a little biased on that one.
Yeah, you're not by yourself.
Well, what can I say? It's an amazing book. It was an amazing residency. I'm honored that you felt that my presence there was a good thing, and I thank you for your work.
I thank you, Paul. This is beautiful. Thank you so much. Wow.
Cascadian Prophet supporters include Diana Elser, a sponsorship dedicated to her parents whose practicality, humor, and love of family life reflected their experience in and love for the Eastern Missouri Breaks and Western Ruby Valley, Montana landscapes that define their childhoods. And Steinbrook Native Gallery, located near Pike Place Market in downtown Seattle, featuring fine art of the Northwest Coast from emerging and established artists. A link to their site at cascadianprophets.org. Cascadian Prophets is a project of the Cascadia Poetics Lab in Seattle, Washington. Check us out online at cascadiapoeticslab.org.